How you doing today, Coach?
Okay, Glenn. Yeah, short night. Steve, Michael.
Sleep is overrated. Yeah. You know, when you win, it's not a problem. When you lose, I guess. Now, do you sleep better after wins, or do you sleep at all after a loss?
Yeah, it's tougher after loss, a loss. Yeah.
Brady was saying this morning he does not sleep after a loss at all.
It's hard to get some things out of your mind.
even after all these years, all these victories, all these great games you've been part of, it still eats at you when you lay down and put your head on the pillow.
If it doesn't go well, sure does.
Yeah.
Sure. Probably eats at you more after the years because you.
I do. I remember the losses real well. I remember screwing up, the screw ups more than the two or three big plays I had.
Lows are a lot lower than the highs.
Yeah.
the team came out of that funk, but what is happening early on in the games where your offense seems to sputter? What was it, 4 3-and-outs last night to begin that game, and then suddenly they figure it out. Whatever the other team's doing, they get into a rhythm, and suddenly you're fine. What is it that happens early in the game here, Bill?
Yeah, I don't know. If I did, we'd have it fixed by now. So we just got to work a little harder at that, getting off to a good start and doing things better early in all three phases, really. We could help the offense out with better field position on defense, make plays in the kicking game. But just overall, we got to do a better job.
They could have done a Bill Belichick, This Is Your Life last night. Anthony Pleasant, Otis Smith, Scott Pioli, Romeo Crennel. What are some of the challenges? Todd Haley, you coached with him for a while. What are some of the challenges of going against guys who you've coached with before? Not from a sentimental standpoint, but from an X's and O's standpoint, because they know philosophically what you're trying to do to them.
I don't know. I mean, there are challenges every week. So, each week's tough. But I guess a little bit about what you think they're going to try to do. And you want to have some kind of plan for it. But, you know they're going to do something to give you a problem. And I just have to figure out what that is. But, we get that every week. It's just, you never know exactly what it's going to be. You just try to prepare for it. And then when you see it, deal with it the best you can. But certainly Romeo does a great job of preparing his defense, and as you said, Otis and AP, along with them, I know they're hardworking guys that really know our personnel, know our probably some of our tendencies, some of the things we like to do. So, they do a good job.
Too many off the tree, I think. Now they're littered around the league.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, we see some of that. Don will say every week, but seems like quite a bit.
I was going to say the practices, not that members of the media get to see practice, but I can imagine in practice you had a lot of competitive situations where, Romeo was here as a defensive coordinator, and he's trying to get his guys to disguise some coverages for Brady, and Brady is trying to get by them. Did you see a lot of this stuff where last night Romeo's trying to do something and either Tom says or you say, okay, I know what he's trying to do here, and this is our counter move?
Well, I like to think usually we can do that. We can watch part of the game and see, okay, I think we know what they're trying to do here. I'd like to think we could get that on a fairly regular basis. But, as with each series, as you get further and further into the game and you see more of it unfold, you should have a better idea of, what they're trying to do and how you want to try to match up with them. Of course, they keep it moving. I mean, it's not the same thing every play, but you get a general sense of how they want to try to play the game, and then hopefully you can find a way to counteract it.
I guess the guys who can't diagnose it don't hang around in the league very long from a coaching standpoint or a quarterbacking standpoint.
Well, I think everybody probably does a pretty decent job of that. In the end, it comes back down to having a good putting your players in a good position, coaching, play calling, so forth, and then the execution of the plays. And so one without the other isn't good. If you can combine them together, then you've got something, and you can make adjustments.
Could the slow start offensively and defensively have anything to do with taking a team lightly with a backup quarterback and a team that had been struggling a little bit?
Well, I think every week we face good teams with good players, with good coaches that work hard, and I think we all know in this league there's no you can't drop down a level like you can in college and play some some 1AA team. You got to, you know, these guys are all in the NFL. So we know it's going to be tough every week. I think in last night's game, you got to give Kansas City credit. They did a good job on some things, and you know, eventually we were able to do a good job. But you know, they definitely presented us some problems.
How much does the thing evolve as the game is going on? Obviously, they're blitzing early on in that game. You've got to make some changes so that you can take some of that pressure off the quarterback. How much of that was evolving, and how much did you change up early on in the game based on what you saw from the get-go from Kansas City's defense?
I'd say no more than normal. Just again, you see what they're doing. You take a look at what you have in your game plan. If you have something that you feel like combats it well, great. If not, then maybe you need to either put something in or adjust something that you have to make it fit better.
How did your defense react overall to the no huddle or the hurry up sort of scenario that they were trying at different points in the game? That Kansas City was trying at different points.
I think it was a little bit of a communication and an adjustment issue. They ran it a little bit differently. They kind of came into a real quick huddle and then all broke at once. So it was a little bit of a you know, scattershot type of huddle. They didn't no huddle at the line of scrimmage, which, you know, defensively I don't think is that big of a problem, because the one good thing is you can see the formation early and it declares while they're trying to call the play and get their side of it communicated. But in this case, they kind of they had a fast pace, but they came together in a huddle, and so you couldn't see the formation, but then they went to the line very quickly and you know, limited the amount of time you had to adjust. So that was something that was a little bit different, and we had to make a little bit of an adjustment with our timing and some of our communication and calls. But I think our players did a good job of handling it, but it's, you know, it was a challenge.
How different is it, Bill, when you get a guy like a Tyler Palco that your players don't really know, haven't seen? You've probably spent some time. He threw the ball, 13 times before 13 pass attempts. But you guys haven't seen his moves. For an example, certainly look like he's the type of guy that runs to run, though he did throw the ball one time on the run. Looks like he's running to run. How much of that is trying to get the guys up to speed to what this guy is all about?
Well, he might have only thrown a small number of regular season passes, but I want to say we looked at all his passes from preseason and the 670 through last week against Denver or whatever it was. I think there was 75 passes or so. So that's a pretty good sampling. It's always different when you watch a guy on film and play against him. Of course, that's the wild card, is, you know, what actual game speed and game, you know, what things are in a game versus what they are in film. But I think we were pretty well prepared for him, and we'd actually seen quite a bit of him, just not in regular season games and preseason games. But as far as his throwing mechanics and you know, his running speed, his elusiveness in the pocket, things like that, I think we saw plenty of that.
I know you like position versatility with all your players, but with Solder, position versatility is not just playing the left side and right side. It's also playing tight end. Did that factor in to your decision to draft him, or was that something?
No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not.
And how did he come to play this role? Was that something you guys saw during training camp? You said, "Oh, wait a minute, you know, we could do this with Solder." Did it happen by accident? How did he
Nate went to Colorado and had a background as a tight end, then he moved to tackle, and we drafted him as a tackle, and I think he's a good tackle. He can play tackle. I don't think there's any question about that in any of our minds. But as it unfolded, with Sebastian missing the last part of preseason and then some games in the early part of the regular season, Nate played a lot on the right side, and then when Sebastian came back, then we started using Nate in some tight end situations and, you know, short yardage, goal line, things like that, and then it sort of evolved. And he's a very flexible kid, like you mentioned, can play left and right side as a tackle, just athletically, stance, footwork, and all that, which is not necessarily a given. And he's a smart kid and was able to understand some of the tight end techniques that were similar but always a little bit different than what the tackle does. But he adapted that pretty well, and I think he's done a good job for us there. But, no, we drafted him to play tackle. We're not moving him to tight end. But to use him there in a game, if it we feel like it gives us an advantage and helps us win, then sure, absolutely.
So when does he start lobbying for you to throw him a pass?
You know, Nate's pretty quiet. He's fortunately, he hasn't been doing a lot of that lobbying. We got a lot of the guys lobbying, right. So yeah, he hasn't been on that train yet.
Yeah.
Talking about the tight end group, obviously you've got some tight ends that can catch the football. You've had teams where you've had tight ends that have been terrific blockers, and you've kind of gone more with the wide receivers, and those guys were in protection. With this group of tight ends, do you just adjust based on the skill set that the guy brings to the table? Obviously, you got a guy like Gronkowski who can do it all. You want to utilize him. But do you just base it from team to team? Because you can look back to some of your teams. You've had tight ends that basically were staying in there and blocking, and now you've got two guys that are a big part of your passing offense.
Well, I think you definitely have to take into account what the player's skills are. But I think with players like Rob and Aaron, because they're young and they're at the beginning stages of their career, I'm not sure that you know exactly fully what their skills are. You know what they're good at and what they're proficient at now, but with work, how much can they evolve? How much can they improve in areas that you might feel are not at the level you want it to be? And I would say in both those players' cases, they've improved in a lot of things over the last year and a half, you know, going on 2 years here. So, you know, what's their skill set? Well, this is what it was coming out of college. I think that both of them have upgraded their skills, their versatility, their ability to do things for us since that time. So then when you finally get to that point, well, this is what the player, we think the player can do. This is what we don't think he can do. Well, then you, you know, are sure of those things. But some things that they didn't do very well last year, they're actually doing pretty well this year. So I don't think you want to rule some of those things out too quickly until you give them a chance or until you're sure.
You know, you gave us a really good breakdown last week of sacks and how they're random at times. You know, it could have been Anderson against the Jets. It wound up being Carter in some situations for the four sacks. How about interceptions? Do you think they're as random as sacks? Or did certain guys just have a nose for the ball and hands for the ball, and when they get interceptions, it's generally because of something they did?
Well, there's certainly that element to it, no question, that some guys do have a nose for the ball and do have hands and great instincts. Asante Samuel is certainly one of those players. But, you know, sometimes that's a function of opportunity, too, and if a corner – and we've all seen them in the past, the Champ Baileys, the Deion Sanders, guys like that, that teams continually throw away from. Maybe they don't get many opportunities to make plays and intercept passes. And sometimes other players that are being more targeted frequently might have a chance to do that. So, again, I don't think that's – look, I don't know if there's any individual stat that really correlates to winning and losing other than – you know, quarterback rating, because quarterback rating does include interceptions. It does include touchdown passes. And again, not that that's the end all either, but it's one of the few statistics that actually incorporates something that really has a lot to do with winning and losing in it. But, you know, the other stats, a lot of those are just, some of them are circumstantial, some of them are opportunity. I don't know if that's totally a reflection of what you are or aren't as a football team.
You know, Mike Tirico was saying last night during the broadcast that you had talked with Kyle Arrington about, you know, after the season, working on his ball skills. In your mind, what did that mean for Arrington? What were you looking for him to do? Was it going out and just repeatedly catching the ball? Is it watching more film? What were you looking for him to do? Because obviously some things have paid off for him so far this season.
Well, I don't think this was the off season to, you know, be able to do a lot of film study, because the players weren't here. And, you know, a defensive back, a lot of a defensive back's interceptions or plays on the ball come when he doesn't see the ball thrown. It's relatively easy if you're standing out there and the quarterback just happens to throw it right to you. I mean, that's great, but a lot of times you're covering your receiver and then you see him go into a break and then you turn and look for the ball and the ball's already halfway there in flight, or it's just being released in the quarterback's hand or whatever it is. So a lot of those are reactive type plays rather than just being able to, you know, stand there and shag fly balls, you know, like a center fielder. That's there are a lot of those interceptions that just don't come that way. So ball skills as it relates to A, catching the ball, hand-eye coordination, but B, seeing it late, reacting to it, and knowing that as a defensive back, you're not the intended receiver. The quarterback's not trying to throw to you. So should the ball be an easy spot for you to catch it? It really shouldn't be very often. If the quarterback's doing a good job, you should have to work for those interceptions and make difficult catches because you're not the guy he's looking for. So
yeah, I think he made one of the most athletic plays I've seen this year. Arrington and
the end zone pick.
And Tom mm-hmm. Brady in the same game, yeah. Okay, against the Giants. And Brady was an incompletion. I know you remember it was a bad snap.
Yeah.
He was able to recover it. I think he rolled to the right and he passed it to Woodhead, and I think right. It was an incompletion. But that, even though it didn't result in anything positive, it could have been disastrous. And
absolutely. It was a heads-up play, and I think that's one of the toughest plays for a quarterback to make is when something happens on the play that's you just don't expect. You just don't count on it. A bad snap. One of the offensive linemen misses a guy, and he just runs straight through the line of scrimmage unblocked. The receiver runs the wrong route, or he falls down or slips, things like that. And what a quarterback has to do at that point is make a very quick decision as to what to do with the ball. Do I try to, number one, you know, protect it, make sure I don't lose it? Number two, can I have any opportunity for this to be a positive play? And number three, you know, at all costs, you know, don't let anything bad happen. Don't turn the ball over. If it's not a good play, then, you know, take the loss, come back, get it down the next down, or punt the ball, whatever it is. But don't try to make, you know, an impossible play that just has really no chance for success and end up, you know, making a bad play worse. And so when those plays happen in practice, which occasionally they definitely do, that's an opportunity for a quarterback to use that, his quick reactive time to, in practice, make that same decision he would make in the game. Maybe it's a different play, but it's the same process of, you know, reacting quickly to a bad situation. And it's tough for a quarterback, and it's tough in practice because, you know, when it happens, you know, a lot your instinct in practice a lot of times is just, okay, it's, you know, it's a bad play. But what you really want the player to do is to react to it at game speed and do whatever he do in the game and make that same decision. So when it does happen in the game, he's more prepared to do it. But our quarterbacks do a good job of that. When we have those kind of plays in practice, they try to handle them like as if it was a game situation. You know, you go to hand the ball off, the back goes the wrong way. Now what do you do? You know, and then you do the right thing. You don't turn it over. You don't lose any more yards. You make the best out of it.
Defense gave up 3 points in the game last night, and yet all those post-game shows last night were talking about the defense and questioning how good this defense was. 3 weeks ago, you brought up an interesting point. You talked about red zone. You thought that they were better in every game this year in the red zone than what you saw last year. What's important to you defensively? The yardage is still there. They're giving up an awful lot of yards, but the red zone's been pretty damn good.
Well, the most important thing defensively is points. That's why we're playing the game. So how do they score points? They either get it on a big play or they drive it through the red zone into the end zone, and that's how you score. So if you don't give up big plays, if they can't get it all at once on a 50 or 60-yard play and they have to drive through the red zone and you have an opportunity to stop them and you do stop them, then you really shouldn't give up many points. So if you can eliminate big plays and play good in the red area and make them kick field goals, if they can get it down there, then how many points can they really score?
So the yardage is a bad barometer.
Well, you don't want to give up yards either. I mean, there's nothing better than three and out and getting that field position back, get it for the offense, but what's more important, points or field position? Points.
Well,
so,
that's,
in the end, you know, everything's important. Look, everything's important, but what's the most important thing? Points. How do points scored? They're either scored on big plays or they're scored on drives that go through the red area.
They actually had a graph on last night's game that in every year that you've coached,
yep,
your defenses have given up fewer points than yards. Where the standings are, if you line up the where you placed each year in yardage and points, it's a lot less in points than it is in yardage. I don't think that's by design, but maybe it is.
Well, I think when you know part of your philosophy is not to give up big plays, then you may give up some yardage. And again, we don't want to give up yardage either. Believe me, I mean we don't want to. We want to hold them to no yards, no points, and turn a ball over. You know, those are our goals. But
you're a little greedy, aren't you?
Well, I mean, that's what defense is.
Right.
But of the choice of those three things, what do you want to, you know, what do you want least to have happen, or what do you least want to have happen to you? It's for them to score touchdowns. So,
but by playing defense to prevent big plays, are you not, in essence, giving up sometimes a little bit of yardage underneath? So you add it all up at the end of the game. There's a lot of yardage against that defense, but did they make that big play? It was all small stuff underneath, moving down the field.
Yeah, I think that's sure that's part of it. Yeah, that's part of it.
Is it a fine line between, especially defensive backs, being aggressive and being cautious?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And again, there's a fine line there between trying to make a play and gambling to make a play and giving one up. So it's calculated risk. It's you know, it's judgment, it's decision making in the secondary. We talk about, you know, quarterbacks and decision making with the ball in their hands and who they throw it to and what guy they try to get it to and what guy they pull it down and go to the secondary receiver and those kind of things. It's just no different with defensive back. You know, what play can they make and what play can't they make and which ones are right there in the gray area and what's the right decision to make on whether to go for it or not go for it. So the decision making in the secondary is critical. It's critical.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Philadelphia Eagles' next opponent up on the schedule coming up next with our weekly conversation with Bill Belichick. 3, 2, 1. Well, as of today, Bill, we're not sure who's going to be the quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles. Does it make a difference? How do you plan for Vic or going with Young?
Well, we plan for both of them, and Kafka, too, for that matter. Who knows what's going to happen in the game? Whichever guy they put in there 2 plays later, it could be the other one. That could be beyond their control, too. So we have to prepare for all the quarterbacks and all the players on the roster, really. We've got to be ready for all of them, and whichever ones we get, we get. We can't control that, but we need to prepare for all of them. And in Vic and in Young's case, and they're both outstanding players. They've got great arms. They can run. They're athletic. They have experience in the league. So, you know, one's right-handed, one's left-handed. That definitely makes a difference. And, you know, I think there are some intricacies and mechanics with each player that are particular to them. But in general terms, Philadelphia can run their offense with either one of them. They've both been productive. So we've got to be ready for both of them.
I'm going to ask you more about Philadelphia in a second. But I've been thinking about this Vince Wilfork thing in terms of the snaps that he's on the field. He's on the field a lot more often than he has been in the past, and I don't think he'll mind us saying this. We see him every week. He's certainly not getting any slimmer, so it's not like he's losing weight to play more snaps. Did you have a conversation with Vince at any point to say, we're going to have you on the field a lot more than you've been in the past? You're not just going to be playing a traditional nose. Get ready, heads up, because it doesn't seem like weight loss is part of being on the field more for him.
Well, I think in the end it comes down to conditioning and being able to play effectively. You know, you can put a guy out there for however many plays you want, and the real question is how many plays is he effective for. So just because he's out there doesn't mean that those are productive plays. And we've all seen other players play a limited number of plays, the Kevin Faulks of the world, that are out there for a dozen, 15, 20 plays in some cases. Yet after the game, you talk about the impact that a player like that had on the game. So it's in the end, I think it's quality or quantity. But in Vince's case, Vince is, showed us last year and showed us this year that he's in good condition. He can play not only a significant number of plays, but at a high level and high quality plays. So that's why he's in there longer. If he wasn't effective on those plays, then we really would rather, you know, have more of a rotation. But at the same time, you don't want to take your best players off the field just for the sake of taking them off the field. If there's a purpose for it and it's part of a rotation or they need a break, then that's one thing. If they don't and they're fresh and they're ready to go, then there's really not I don't think there's a great advantage to take him out of there. You're just doing them a favor by taking one of your better players off the field.
Is that uncommon for, and I can't say his position now is nose tackle. It was when he came into the league, but he's got more versatility to his game. Is that uncommon for somebody of his size and what we thought his position was a couple of years ago to be out there that much? Usually you think of those guys in 25 to 30 play increments, not sometimes 65. I think he played 66 last week. That's a hell of a lot for a guy of that size.
Yeah, again, I think it depends on the player, his role, your style of defense, and so forth. So, but I mean, we see plenty of defensive tackles in the league that do play a lot, and then there are other teams and other players that are in a patterned rotation, and for whatever those reasons are, whether it's because that's the way the team wants to do it, or the player needs to be rotated, or you know, whatever it is. So. Again, I can't really speak to anybody else's situation, but I would just say with Vince that, again, Vince is he's in good condition. He plays well. He plays well for the number of plays that he's in there. So it's not like we're coming in on the day after the game saying, well, he played too many plays. He really wasn't effective over this stretch of plays or that stretch of plays. That's really not the case.
You know, Deossi, we talked about this a couple weeks ago off the air. You know, some guys tapped their helmet.
Yeah.
I can't remember many situations over the years where I've seen Vince Wilford tap his helmet
to get out.
Probably has to be pulled out, I would imagine.
No, for his own good. That's one of the great things about Vince, and I'd say the same thing about Andre and Sean Ellis, the guys like that. That they actually want to be on the field. They don't want to be substituted for. I mean, if they need a break, that's one thing. But just for the sake of being rotated through, and other defensive linemen have a different attitude about that. They play a few plays, they play a series, and okay, well, where's the guy that's coming in for me? You know, like that's really the attitude of the look, and you know, guys like I said, like that's not the case with them. They're not looking for somebody to come in for them. They're, you know, they want to be out there, and that's I like that attitude.
Asked you to run the ball like Raji did this past weekend, like the old fridge run, right? On the goal line. He hasn't asked you to do that yet.
But he'd be a hard guy to stop.
I would say, Bill, that might be an interesting one.
Yeah.
You get him down 1 yard away on that goal line, how do you stop him?
Might be an interesting one.
Yeah. Take him out the knees.
Yeah.
And then hope he doesn't land on you.
It's like a big redwood tree.
Trust me. When you're facing a defense like Philadelphia, very aggressive, in particularly their defensive ends and even their front seven, very aggressive, what's one of the most important things offensively to keep in mind in that situation?
To eliminate negative plays and not get into long yardage. You know, a first and 10 can be second and 7. A second and 7 can be third and 3. You know, at least you have a chance on those plays. But when first and 10 becomes second and 14, and second and 10 becomes third and 17, it's so hard against a team that can rush like that, that has multiple coverage schemes, that has, you know, outstanding players in the secondary. You know, the more long yardage situations you get into, the worse it's going to be. So trying to stay on track, trying to stay in advantageous down and distance situations, second and medium, second and short. Making positive yards on first down, or if you don't make positive yards on first down, certainly not putting yourself in a precarious situation on second down, where second and 10 can become third and 15, then, you know, hopefully second and 10 can become third and 4, and you can get back on schedule so that you have some options. So, you know, again, being third and 4, third and 3, you know, you have a lot of different options with your play calling. You can throw to any one of the five receivers, and you can run the ball. You can do a lot of things to gain 3 or 4 yards. You know, when it's third and 15, how many receivers do you have running 15-yard routes? You know, you pick out 2 or 3 of them, but maybe 2, 1, whatever it is. But, you know, you can't send 5 guys, you know, downfield 15 yards too often. So defensively, you're only defending 1 or 2 things. Maybe you don't care about the run at that point. So you're only trying to stop a couple things, and that's why those conversions are hard to get. So Staying ahead of schedule with Philadelphia, staying on long yardage, and not turning the ball over, that's number one.
What have you seen over the last few weeks from them? Very talented team. They've struggled. Last week they shut down the Giants' running game, made them one-dimensional. What have they done over the last couple of weeks that where they seem to be playing now back up to the level of their talent, Bill?
Well, I mean, I think they've looked good in every game that they've played, and I'd say better than good, you know, outstanding. They've had a few plays that have that have overridden kind of their positive ones, and which is always could be the case when they're if they're bad enough, you know, turnovers and not scoring in the red area on the inside the 5 yard line and things like that. But overall, I think that they're very talented, and they do a lot of things to cause you problems in all three phases of the game: offense, defense, special teams. They're a very explosive team. And you've got to really be sound in everything you do against these guys. They're tough. You know, you look at the Dallas game, I don't know, 34-3 or whatever it was. I mean, we know Dallas is a good football team. Dallas is leading that division, and they absolutely handled them. So they're very talented. They're very good.
Yeah, right, Michael, you get the question of the
week. Oh, yeah, the coach's question of the week is brought to you by Lexus of Watertown, inviting you to the December to Remember sales event. Details at lexusofwatertown.com. And the question relates to the news that happened last night. Bill, you won your 184th career regular season game as a head coach with the win against Kansas City. You moved past Bill Parcells into sole possession of ninth place on the all-time list. Obviously, there's some great names on the all-time list. And the question is, other than Bill Parcells, who you worked with for many years, is there anybody on this list who greatly influenced the way you do business, the way you think, and if so, who is it and why? Got a lot of great ones. Paul Brown.
Shula. Hallis. Landry.
Yeah.
Right. Lambeau.
Curly Lambeau.
Schottenheimer. Reese. Knox.
Well, you know, a lot of great coaches. None of them that I have worked really very closely with, of course, other than Bill. And, you know, it was a great opportunity to work with Bill, and we won a lot of games together, and I was there for a lot of those wins that he had. So, you know, I mean, I definitely learned a lot from him, but I think you learn something from all the other coaches that you see across the field or watch them in other games, and certainly you learn from studying what they do. I mean, Paul Brown really is, you know, to me, the top coach ever, and he was the one who you know, Mentor Chula. So I know Don has the 347 wins, but it really, you know, Paul Brown's really, you know, one of the fathers of the NFL and certainly professional coaches. So I don't think you can put anybody really above what the contributions that that he's made to the game are. But it's flattering to be on the list, and anything that has to do with winning, I'm proud of. So it's nice to be part of a winning statistic. I'll take that any day.
You know, and it's so amazing, too, to think about before Paul Brown. The whole classroom aspect and film breakdown is just so standard to us now. But before Paul Brown made it standard, I mean, I can't even imagine what it was like for pro football players not to have
roll out the ball and start playing. Right. You know, let's go play.
Let's see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Paul was, you know, about preparation, as you said, film study and classroom preparation and plays and screen passes and draws and, you know, reverses and bootlegs and counterplays and things like that. And those are all, you know, part of Paul's, and Paul really developed the West Coast offense with, you know, which Bill Walsh took with him to San Francisco. And of course it's had, a lot of branches and come off it. But that was really, you know, that was really Paul's offense at Cincinnati. So, you know, he's had a tremendous influence even 50, 60 years later in the National Football League. We're all really doing the same thing that Paul Brown did when he started coaching the Browns, and or even when he was coaching Cleveland in the old All-American League.
You know what jumps out at me here on this one, Bill? 184, 103, zero. No ties. You look at how the game has changed. Yeah. George Hallis, 31 ties. Curly Lambeau, 22.
Let's just keep playing. Let's figure it out.
Even Landry and Shula had six. You may go your entire career, be very high up on this list, and the only one with zero ties.
That's an interesting one.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, fascinating. All right, listen, congratulations on the win. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and good luck in Philadelphia.
Thanks, Glenn. Steve, Michael, same to you and all our listeners out there. Have a great Thanksgiving weekend, and We'll be back next week after Philly.
You got it, Bill. We'll see you next week. Bill.